This is Rotten Rewind. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. You guys know who we are because you're on Patreon. We're a podcast that we haunt the films of Rotten Tomatoes past. We haunt the films that critics tried to gaslight. If a film fails to score under the 60% threshold that Rotten Tomatoes deems as its freshness standard, we get to talk about it right here on this podcast. I'm Max Rue.
And I'm Courtney Peronto.
I should start gaslighting you every episode.
I bet you could.
I find these movies so comforting.
Also, just so well paired, Max. Kudos. I had never seen Gothica.
I had never seen Gothica. Yeah.
So I didn't think you had either. And I was like, how did he do it? So good job.
I knew what Gothica was. And then at times I started to question if I maybe did watch it at some point, like on HBO back in the day. Okay. And I just didn't remember. Maybe it was just like I'd seen the trailer so many times and like the poster is very memorable in a way.
Yeah, I remember the poster.
Yeah, we're talking about a pair of, these are some real supernatural gaslighting thrillers. Two movies that at least one of them, I would say, just doesn't get made anymore. I'm talking about What Lies Beneath from Robert Zemeckis. Weirdly restrained for him. He does get to, you know, experiment a little bit here and there. But yeah, just movies that don't really get made anymore. What Lies Beneath, 2000 thriller for adults starring two grown adult movie stars, Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And Gothica, kind of a weirdly, I would say maybe slightly elevated from the normal annual Dark Castle movie we would get.
Wait, that's name the like a Dark Castle.
So they, I think of them as the company that like in between the 90s slasher craze and the torture porn and then like J-horror remake craze that we had.
Okay.
There was this little sliver of time where Dark Castle kind of ran the marketplace of horror movies around Halloween. So like every October they dropped kind of like a new metal remake of like a 50s Vincent Price style horror movie. So there was House on Haunted Hill with Taye Diggs.
Right.
There was 13 Ghosts with Tony Shalhoub and Shannon Elizabeth and Matthew Lillard. There was Ghost Ship.
Was Identity one of them?
Identity was not one of them, but Identity feels like a What Lies Beneath, like a movie that just wouldn't get made anymore. Like big stars, you know, showing up for maybe a paycheck, but
yeah,
also...
Yeah, but it's, I feel like Identity is more makeable now. Like,
because it's also like a single location thing.
Exactly. Where like this is two really big movie stars. I would gently like say middle-aged.
At least Harrison Ford is at this point middle-aged. Michelle Pfeiffer's 41 when this was made. But yeah, Ghost House or Dark Castle. Ghost House is the Sam Raimi company, I think. Dark Castle, they did Fear.com with Stephen Dorff. There's a very specific aesthetic to their movies.
Okay. What's the one with the handprint? Is that House on Haunted Hill?
That's House on Haunted, where their faces are all in the handprint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's House on Haunted Hill. They're all rotten.
And all of them?
All of them. We could have done a Dark Castle miniseries.
Halloween, maybe. Halloween's coming up.
I would totally revisit House on Haunted Hill.
Me too. I think I like it.
I think it's fun. 13 Ghosts is probably not great. Matthew Lillard's in it, though, so hey. Ghost Ship has a really crazy, memorable opening scene.
That's just about a ghost ship, right?
It is about a ghost ship. It'd be funny if it wasn't, though.
Is it about a ghost ship?
Actually, it's not.
I'm saying, like, why is that scary to us? It's like, there's a bunch of floating ghosts. Who cares?
Well, because they kill you. In all these movies, they kill you.
Who's going to go visit the ghost ship?
Oh, it's like, I think it's like a crew of...
That's what I needed to know.
Hold on. Now I want to remember who visits the ghost ship. A boat salvage crew discovers the eerie remains of a grand passenger liner thought lost for more than 40 years. Yes.
Sick poster.
Desmond Harrington's part of the crew. Desmond Harrington, our guy from last week. You get Gabriel Byrne, Juliana Margulies, Carl Urban, Emily Browning is the little girl in the opening scene. The opening scene is basically like, it's everyone on the ships up top. What is the word? On the deck. Thank you. Sorry. I was like, what does it mean on be on top of boat? what does that mean? everyone's dancing and then like something comes loose and somehow like cuts everybody in half while they're dancing.
You're fucking kidding. Even the kid?
No, the kid survives because she's shorter than the thing that cuts everyone in half. So she survives. Okay. But I think the whole thing is that she's the only one that survives. And then she just eventually like starves to death on this boat because she's like the ghost that's kind of...
Are you fucking kidding me?
Leading them around. She's like the good ghost.
I guess same director as 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, Steve Beck. Yeah, Steve Beck and William Malone were kind of the in-house guys. So yeah, Gothica, though, was kind of like an... I feel like elevated.
Yeah, Gothica and the Eye, the Jessica Alba J-horror remake, have the same poster aesthetic to me. I mean, it has Halle Berry and Penelope Cruz.
That's what I mean. It's like Halle Berry right after her Oscar. And then you get, yeah, Penelope Cruz, Downey's first comeback role. We got a great little John Carroll Lynch side performance, which is always welcome.
Is he one of the most typecast?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's a character
actor. Do you
think
he's cool?
Yeah, I think he's probably a really nice guy that just gets cast as really creepy people. Yeah, the moment he shows up on screen, you're like, well, he's up to something. But yeah, I feel like both these movies, especially like What Lies Beneath, have such a like kind of comforting feeling about them. They're not particularly like great by any means, but I do think if What Lies Beneath came out today, people would be like, wow, what a great throwback.
I'm sorry. We're living in an age where we were just like, The Quiet Place rules. And it's like, does it? I don't think it rules.
No, I don't think it does either. I would take a million What Lies Beneath over a lot of the shit that we get today.
He was the perfect husband until his one mistake.
Did you know her?
I had an affair with her. She threatened to kill herself.
Followed them home.
There's a ghost in my house.
And now she's trying to hurt you.
Stop it.
Who do you think it is?
I know exactly who it is.
Harrison Ford.
Tell me what to do.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Something is happening.
What Lies Beneath, rated PG-13.
I think I might have seen What Lies Beneath in the theater. This is a movie that I think a lot of people are our age, my age, vividly remember, because I'm pretty sure a bunch of us saw this in the fucking theater.
I saw it in the theater. I was young, but I went with my mom. I remember to see it.
PG-13. Yeah. And I mean, I was always a Michelle Pfeiffer stan since I was a little girl, because she's the best.
She's the best.
She is just the best. What year is One Fine Day? Like 3 years before this?
One Fine Day is 96. Yeah, she's like barely into her 40s in this movie. Harrison Ford, I don't think is quite yet 60. No, not yet.
He looks great. You know, they're a married couple. I think the first, like the opening scene is them lying in bed together, and then they kind of like send their daughter off to college. And so suddenly they're empty nesters. And
right.
Michelle Pfeiffer's character is named Claire. She starts kind of like in a Rear Window way, starts to obsess about the neighbors. And she believes that the neighbors maybe killed his wife. So it seems like it's going to be kind of a Rear Window remake, but then it veers off into sort of like a paranormal thing where she's seeing like a ghost that kind of looks like herself in the water. It's a very wet movie.
Very wet. Yeah, the neighbors are James Remar and Miranda Otto. I don't recognize
Miranda Otto, but James Remar, I think everyone knows, is Dexter's dad. And he's Samantha's fuckboy piece of shit in Sex and the City.
He's a classic scumbag character actor. Yeah, I didn't recognize him quite at first until I heard his voice when you see him from afar.
He has a really weird beard in this.
Yeah, he looks like a professor.
Yeah, no, I think he does. I think he looks like a shitty art professor.
Yeah, she hears them like fighting, and then she hears them having makeup sex, and then her and Harrison Ford try to have a competition with them to see who can fuck louder.
One of the weirdest parts of this movie, and I think that like because it shouldn't feel subversive that these are older people fucking, but I do think that like part of the reason why this movie like feels like not. I guess it does feel a little odd is that like these are like middle-aged married people that fuck. The opening of this movie is really horny.
Yeah, they're like about to fuck and then they're going to close the windows because the neighbors are so loud, and then she's like, leave them open.
Yeah, I have a note that says they listen to these neighbors fuck. They're going to have a competition. These people are animals. Like, they're fucking weird. Who are these people?
Our daughter's gone. Now we can have a fuck off with our new neighbors. Yeah, and so like she hears them having like arguments. Yeah, the whole thing feels very like, and I don't even mean this in like a shitty way. It just kind of is like the vibe is very slow burn thriller about wine mom who has too much time on her hands and is like, I guess I'll spy on the neighbors.
Yeah. Well, what was that movie with what's her name last year with Amy Adams that we were like, oh my God.
The Woman in the Window. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like the closest.
Yeah, it's kind of
that, but The Woman in the Window is just so bad. It's kind of Woman in the Window.
And then it turns into like, spoiler alert, it becomes kind of, like, Secret of the Enemy.
Yeah, it becomes like a paranormal erotic thriller, which is really interesting, which it sounds more fun on paper maybe than some of the results, but like I also think that's a Zemeckis problem.
Yeah, I think so too.
I will say, we should say that the script is definitely, I think, one of the weaker points of the movie.
You don't like the seance?
I love the seance.
You don't like the seance, Max?
The movie was written by a woman named Sarah Kernachin. It was sold to DreamWorks, which at the time was a new studio. It was Spielberg's studio. That's where he was going to have all of his movies. Mm-hmm. They did Saving Private Ryan. So at the time, like, they're throwing a lot of money behind projects that don't necessarily require the budgets that maybe they do.
The water bill on this, though.
This movie cost $100 million to make. You can see it for sure, but this movie today costs $20 million. No one's spending $100 million on this movie today. It just shows you what a different fucking time it was. This is the late Clinton pre-9/11 days where we're just so blissfully unaware. Give $100 million to Robert Zemeckis to make an adult thriller. I guess Spielberg brought the script to Zemeckis. Said, I think you would be really good for this. Zemeckis at the time was doing Castaway, which took years to make because they had to wait.
Also very wet.
Very wet. There was a big break the Castaway had where Tom Hanks had to gain a fuckload of weight.
Oh, yeah.
So they stopped shooting for 8 months, and he made this in the 8 months in between. Because Castaway comes out a few months after What Lies Beneath. It was a big year for Zemeckis. Probably his last really great year, I would say. So they bring it to Zemeckis. They get Michelle Pfeiffer. They get Harrison Ford. They get these huge stars to come on board. Who were both, you know, super down for it. But then the script gets rewritten by a guy named Clark Gregg, who we all know. As the man who adapted Choke. He's a character actor. Clark Gregg is in Marvel movies.
He's in the Marvel universe. Yeah.
No, yeah. You know him when you see him. At the time, I think this was his first like big screenwriting credit. So he revised it. Who knows what the fuck he did? Because according to the original writer, it was a much more feminine story. It was much more it was more of a story about a woman who was very paranoid about, and she is obviously paranoid, but I think it was maybe not as hokey or schlocky about like a woman who is learning more and more about her husband and realizing how much she kind of buried the fact that her husband had an affair.
Right.
Because that's the whole thing is that like, it's kind of alluded to like that there was something that happened.
There was like a car accident.
Yeah.
And everyone's like really concerned about her. I do feel like you have to kind of like catch up to the movie at some point, but.
Yeah, they kind of give you a lot of backstory, but like.
But in a weird moment too. They give you a lot of backstory after she's already begun to sort of like be gaslit.
Right.
Also, have you ever seen Gaslight?
I have, yeah.
Okay. It's like, I just wish more people would actually take the time to watch that movie. Because it's like, this is a movie where she like truly is getting gaslit in the original Gaslight setting. Like, your house by your husband.
And he's doing a great job of it.
He's doing a great job. The screenplay is like probably the weakest part, but if it wasn't for the two leads, like they're so strong, they can be like a Roomba, you know, like they can clean up the room without even trying. Yeah.
They understand the assignment. You don't have to direct them too much.
Yeah.
That's the thing is that like, I think with both these movies, I realized I was like, man, even with not good scripts or like the hokiest of material, like these movies are just being held up by their movie stars because that's when we had actual movie stars who knew how to do that, like in their fucking sleep. Because we would get so many movies like this at the time. You know, it's funny that this was such a huge hit. Like this movie made $300 million. It was a huge hit when it came out. It's also like not, I wouldn't say like forgotten. It's a movie that you don't hear a lot of people praising What Lies Beneath. It's a movie that I think our generation is like, oh yeah, I totally remember that movie. Or I remember seeing that in theaters, but I don't think about it very often. Maybe there is somebody out there who's like, I think about this movie every day in my life.
I think it's because Michelle Pfeiffer to me was like the biggest movie star. Like I kind of followed her career even when she made something that like, she was so big. Up Close and Personal rocks. It has that Celine Dion song.
Oh, fuck. Up Close and Personal.
That movie rips, I think.
That's the one with Redford, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Up Close and Personal. And then there was Dangerous Minds.
She had like a great late 90s, early 2000s streak.
And Ford is like obviously one of the most, we kind of said last week, like we've never talked about Harrison Ford on the podcast because he doesn't really do bad movies, or the ones that are bad are kind of just like forgettable 90s adult thrillers like Random what? Hearts. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Let's see what is rotten in Harrison Ford's his oeuvre. He seems to, you know, choose projects pretty carefully for most of his career. He has a very fresh 80s. He is consistently fresh from Apocalypse Now. Until we get to Regarding Henry in 1991. That's his first rotten one. And then he has this run where he's Indiana Jones. He's doing Witness, Frantic. He's able to balance a career that a lot of Marvel actors can't do.
Chris Evans can't do this.
Exactly. Yeah. He is in Frantic. He's in Presumed Innocent, Patriot Games. So it's like he gets to be Jack Ryan, Han Solo, Indiana Jones. He plays the fucking president in Air Force
One. Blade Runner. Air Force One was huge.
The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Which I had not seen until a couple of years ago. And it's just so good. The Fugitive and The Firm. Just movies like that. We don't get those.
We don't get those anymore.
He is in so it's kind Sabrina of two people remake.
That
have had.
Oh, that movie is not so good.
It's 63.
Actually, you know what? Maybe maybe I would like it now. I don't think that the lead is. I think he is the best part. I think that the men are the best part of that movie. Greg Kinnear is holding down the William Holden part. He really gets the Humphrey Bogart haram.
Gotcha.
I just don't really love that female
Greg
lead.
Kinnear is in the new season of You.
Is he really?
Yeah. This is okay. So he's kind of actually in his lowest period right now with this movie. So after Air Force One, he does, I remember The Devil Zone he does with Brad Pitt. It's an Alan J. Pakula movie. It's not great. And then he does 6 Days, Seven Nights. Not good with Anne Heche. And then he does Random Hearts. And then What Lies Beneath. He has a barely fresh Catherine Bigelow movie that nobody has seen called K-19 The Widowmaker.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I never saw. I think it's her only movie I haven't seen, actually, because I've even seen The Weight of Water. And then he has Hollywood Homicide with Josh Hartnett. He has Firewall. Another give me back my family movie.
Right.
He kind of just owns the cliche of like, I'm just a grizzled silver fox looking for his family. And then he comes back for Indiana Jones in 2008. After that, he just has kind of like a weird, there's the weird lull in between the rebooting of Star Wars and Blade Runner that kind of revamps his presence. But like also like, it didn't seem like he really cared. I don't know. He's kind of like a Jack Nicholson where he's like, I'm just fucking doing my thing. I'm flying my planes. Callista's at home. That's kind of his run for a little bit. He does like very forgettable movies like that movie Morning Glory, which I know you have seen.
Oh, Morning Glory rips. What's
Morning
Glory? It's 55.
We can talk about it.
We have to cover Morning Glory. Like
we'll do
Morning Glory is a movie like 27 Dresses where I'm like, there's no reason why this should be rotten. It's just sexism. Like Morning Glory is delightful.
Sure. And then he has Cowboys and Aliens, which was also another big bomb. He's in that Jackie Robinson movie 42, where he's apparently very good. And then
I forgot that he was in that.
Yeah. He's in the Expendables 3. Like, what's going on? And then The Age of Adeline.
Oh, I did not see that. Didn't you?
I haven't seen it either, but I
someone on the podcast liked it.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. And then comes 2015 when they suddenly call him back and are like, we need you to play every legacy character you ever played.
I know.
Before.
And if anything, that's a little boring to me. And now he's in that stupid show that I don't want to watch.
Oh, yeah, Shrinking. I do love that he comes back for Star Wars and is like, you got to kill me. Kill me now. And then he comes back for Blade Runner 2049, where he's actually really good.
He's really good.
It feels like he actually wants to be there, unlike Star Wars, where it just seems like he's like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
He did a Call of the Wild movie right before COVID. Tight. He's a voice in The Secret Life of Pets, too. Sick.
Oh my God. What kind of pet do you think he is? Like probably like a hound dog?
His character's name is Rooster, so I'm assuming he might be a rooster, but he could also not be. It's possible that he's not. He's doing just fine. And then, yeah, we have Michelle Pfeiffer. Just the fucking, the best. So many great parts leading up to this. Obviously.
One Fine Day.
A rotten movie that we will talk about at some point.
Oh, we sure will.
Oh, man. Did Jillian on her 37th birthday. I remember that movie. I don't know why. Age of Innocence, Batman Returns. She's always going to be our Catwoman. But yeah, she does like those random movies. Yeah, like you said, like Up Close and Personal. 1,000 Acres, Deep End
32.
Of the Ocean. The Story of Us, that Bruce Willis movie. She does the same, right before What Lies Beneath. She does I Am Sam.
Do they hate each other?
Probably.
Yeah.
I could see that. White Oleander, she takes like a huge break after White, or not a huge break, but she's gone for 5 years and comes back for Hairspray and Stardust. And then doesn't really get many great parts for a little bit until Mother. Really, Mother is like the next time that she gets
to do
something
fun. No, what's
that
one where she's like the older woman playing? She's seducing like a younger man. That movie.
I Can Never
good.
Be Your Woman with Paul Rudd.
No.
Oh, you're thinking of French Exit that
Sherry?
Just came out?
No,
oh, Sherry.
Sherry.
Sherry, yeah, yeah. Sherry. I didn't know that's what it was about. Yeah, Sherry. Sherry is a movie that she did in 2009. It's a movie that exists. And now she is unfortunately stuck in the Marvel. She's in the multiverse. She's stuck in Quantumania with Michael Douglas, who just looks like he's in so much pain during those press interviews. I got to get home to Catherine. I got more pussy to eat, more cancer to get. This movie's like perfectly like fun, though.
So I do think that the movie's top heavy. The middle's pretty boring. The beginning and the end... Like, the end's pretty exciting.
The last 30 minutes is a bang.
That's really fucking exciting. And the first 30 minutes are really sort of exciting. It's just there is kind of like a dead hour in between that, we have to have.
Well, because it transitions from, like, am I spying on my neighbors and I think the husband killed his wife? And then it's revealed in a very strange way that he did not kill his wife because
she freaks out at a party.
She confronts this guy, like, in front of a lot of people and is like, I know you killed your wife. And then, like, she comes out of the bathroom and is like, what's going on? And James Remarks so calmly is like,
yeah, I was like, he's pretty nice about it.
He's like, kind of just like, what do you mean? They are so chill about that afterwards. They see them again at another party and they like wave to them like, hey, it's all good. my wife's alive.
I want to go back before that, though, because I do think that, like, before that is, like, when I was, like, this movie's hitting, right? Like, when you were kind of talking about how it's, like, a middle-aged woman that's, like, drinking wine movie. Yes, there's a scene where this, like, middle-aged white rich woman that I don't know why she doesn't work, because he's, like, I don't know, like, a scientist, I guess.
This man works for DuPont. That's the first
And he's like, we figured it out.
Yeah, where you're like, okay, this guy's evil for sure. He works for DuPont. He's doing some secretive shit.
Yeah, but she's like, freaking, she's all freaking out. And she, like, runs outside, and she's just, like, a beautiful white woman crying in an Adirondack chair. And I was like, yes, this subgenre. And then she, like, sees the woman through the fence. And to Michelle Pfeiffer, or Claire, her character's defense, it's kind of justified, because that woman is like, I think he's going to kill me or something. Like, she's like, she's fucking freaking out. She says a bunch of crazy shit to her. And then Michelle Pfeiffer's character does something so funny to me. The woman's, like, all freaking out. Like, just like, get me away from him. He's fucking terrifying. I'm so scared of him. Oh no, who's coming? And Michelle Pfeiffer's like, do you want some coffee? And then later, when Michelle Pfeiffer goes to apologize for accusing her husband of killing her at a party, the woman offers her coffee. And Michelle Pfeiffer is like, yeah, that sounds great.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's have coffee now.
We're just two white women living out here in the country. They live in the Don't Worry, Darling universe.
Yeah. But. And like a different, like.
I love to, Michelle Pfeiffer has a friend. She has, like, her one white lady friend who I think.
Okay. That to me seems like a script revision, because they go to meet Harrison Ford's friend. Yes. And then she's like, who's the most recent love interest? And then this woman's like, me. Oh my God, we know each other. Because it seems like maybe it was written as if they didn't know each other. And then the seance would be weird if you're just having a seance with this woman that you just met. And men are like, well, I don't know. Don't girls do that? And so they're like, you have to make it so you know each other.
There's a moment where Michelle Pfeiffer is telling her friend about the spooky shit going on, and her friend, this, like, middle-aged white woman, just goes, I don't know, I'd be tripping. I was like, wait, what?
And then the middle-aged white woman, her friend, is like, well, you know, I kind of thought he was cheating on you, and I saw him with another woman, and then you plowed your car into, like, a pole, and I figured that you tried to kill yourself.
What the fuck is that?
It's probably the ghost of it's not someone knocking at your door.
No, my neighbor's gaslighting. There's so much foreshadowing in the beginning, too. There's, like, when she goes to the lab and she sees the chemical that they're working on that is going to basically, they're using it on lab rats, and it basically completely debilitates you. So it's like your body can't move, but you know what's like, your mind knows what's happening. Mm-hmm. So they talk about that early on, and you're like, okay, obviously that's going to come back. Also, another thing, do you remember the, like, trailers for this movie?
No.
They give away everything.
They give away that he's, I definitely didn't know that going in, because I remember actually feeling, like, genuine terror when you realize that he's the killer.
Well, because Harrison Ford's never played a villain.
Right.
He's always a good guy.
Cast, because it's like he's just kind of grumpy, and you're like, maybe this bitch is going crazy, and she does seem like she's going crazy. And so you kind of just think that he's fucking grumpy until he gets her out there, and then she starts doing kind of like a little bit of sleuthing. And then he's a really good liar. Like, you kind of believe his first version of the story.
Yeah, he's very good at gaslighting and manipulating the situation. Only Michelle Pfeiffer could sell this line so sincerely when she goes to him really hysterically and just, like, so earnestly. It's like, Jody and I had a seance in the bathroom.
Yeah. He's like, you had a seance.
Yeah, he's like, why would you do that?
He's, like, mad about it.
I told you no seances in the house. This is what you do all day. We got to get you a job. And then he basically is like, are you, like, doing this to sabotage me? Because I have to write this, like, he has to do this huge paper. And he's like, you're sabotaging me with this ghost shit because I'm not spending time with you.
And at that point, I'd be like, she's not. But what if she was? Like, it also seems like he has suspected that she's known even before she starts to get paranormal visions. Like, it seems like once she woke up from her accident, he suspected that she knew. And they've been, like, living in this, like, terse.
Right.
Known
right.
For the so whole the whole time.
Thing is that he had an affair with a student of his who was played by Amber Valletta, who has been on this podcast before for a little movie called Gamer. But she was on America's Next Top Model.
Oh, really?
At the time, she was kind of known for that. And then this was like her first acting role.
She's not in it much.
Yeah, she just gets to play a ghost. She's sending messages in the house to Michelle Pfeiffer. Well, she basically, like, is like, these are my initials. Look me up.
Yeah.
And then she realizes this woman, the whole thing is that she's missing, right?
She's missing. She's been missing for about a year.
She's been missing for a year. Michelle Pfeiffer goes to Amber Valletta's like mom's house to get some more information about her. The mom also has another line. There's a lot of coffee talk in this movie. Yeah. All the women in this movie are just like, you want some coffee? And this mom is like, I got just plain coffee. None of that mocha nonsense. And then she like takes a lock of her hair.
Yeah, that's a weird move. I would probably leave that for the missing woman's mother, but you know.
Yeah, I need this for my seance actually. Is that okay? Yeah. So she takes this girl's hair. And then yeah, it becomes increasingly clear that Harrison Ford had an affair with this woman, might have had something to do with her death. Michelle Pfeiffer finds that there is something in the lake behind their house. It's like a little, what are those boxes called?
Like a shed?
No. The thing that she finds in the lake.
Remember? Oh, like
you put like your jewelry in it.
It's a jewelry box, like a chest, like a.
Sure, it's like a little chest. I thought there was a nicer name for it, but it's just women be putting jewelry in it. That's all I know.
I just be putting my jewelry on plates and stuff.
Okay, well, these women, it was a different time, and they had a whole thing for them. So she finds that, and when she discovers it, she really goes deep diving for that thing late at night. It's smart that they're like, we're not even going to show her taking a deep dive for this because it's so unrealistic that she would be able to do this. And then we get the last 30 minutes, which is very...
It's good.
Goes full Hitchcock, but a little more paranormal. The score gets even more Hitchcock-y.
Well, I think you're forgetting about... There's a scene where she like tries to fuck him, but as the girl that she knows... I don't know still in that scene if she's playing a twisted game with him or if Claire's being like... inhabited by the spirit of the dead.
I don't know. I remember. Okay, so it's when that was like the big scene in the trailer.
Because she's like really good in that scene.
She's great in that scene.
Why don't you shut up, Professor? Why don't you just shut up? I think she's starting to suspect something. Your wife.
Stop it!
She basically like seduces him in this red dress. And I think because it's Zemeckis, I think he does some weird kind of visual effect to make her face look also sort of like Amber Valletta's. Like, I think he's doing some, I don't know what's going
on. Okay.
She looks a lot like Amber Valletta in that scene. I know that they're kind of supposed to look alike anyway. It also feels like she's like weirdly like trying to reinvigorate like their marriage and sex life by pretending to be the dead woman that he had an affair with.
Murdered. Yeah.
What if I dressed up like that woman you killed? Maybe you would want to fuck me. Does she feed him like half an apple in one bite in that scene? She stuffs like half an apple in his
mouth.
And
at some point, he's like, easy.
Yeah, he's like, what the fuck? He's really irritated by it. He's like, I don't want that. I already ate. That was the big scene, I remember.
And then like in the final 30 minutes, it turns into like a weird chamber piece where he's just like drugging her and you're watching her maybe drown in a bathtub.
The bathtub scene is hands down like the highlight of the movie. It is a really, really fucking incredibly suspenseful, well-staged scene. Mm-hmm. It's really good. I almost wished that it just ended in the house.
Yeah, me too.
Because I love also how much time he spends building the suspense of her once she's out of the bathtub, trying to get the phone, not knowing where he is. He builds that up for so long only to reveal that he's just on the ground downstairs, that he collapsed from his head wound.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, I couldn't remember the exact ending. So when I watched it this time, I was like, oh, does it just end like that? You build up all the suspense, but he's just dead already, which I think could also work in its own way because it's still scary. And she's so great in that.
She is really good.
She's so good in those scenes. Like, just like the eye movement she has to do in the bathtub because she can't really show emotion or anything. Her body's paralyzed, but her brain is working, which is terrifying to think about. It feels like a fucking night terror you would have where you're just completely paralyzed watching yourself drown. Not great.
He's even good when he like does the phone scene where he like calls her friend to be like, you have to check on her. Like, we just had a fight.
She's doing seances again. If you can check on her in the morning,
yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah. It's great movie star performances. They know they're just in the pocket. They know what to do. I feel like you have to assume, even if you hadn't seen the trailer, that Ford is going to be the villain because you're kind of watching, even though he's never been a villain, you watch it and like for the first hour, you're like, what is Harrison Ford doing here?
I also want to give a shout out to Joe Morton who plays her.
Oh, yeah. I have a note that just says, where the fuck is Joe Morton?
He was in Scandal for a very long time and he probably gave the best performance in Scandal. But I like Kerry Washington a lot. He played her dad and he was like incredibly like maniacal. He gave a great performance in Scandal and I knew what actor it was just by hearing his voice.
Oh, for sure.
Because I was like, Joe Morton, fuck.
He's a face that I think everybody from our generation just grew up seeing in movies. You might not have known his name at the time growing up, but he was in so much. Obviously, he's in Speed, Executive Decision. He's in a million things. He was just a great character actor, and he used to work a lot more. I'm glad to hear.
I think he does a lot of TV.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of. I think he does a lot of TV. Yeah, he's 75, man. How many credits? Let's see how many credits Joe Morton has on his IMDb.
He has 136.
36. Wow. Yeah. Okay. He was in Justice League. He was in Godzilla. Okay. He's working.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if you were a Scandal stan like I was, that is a huge performance. Like,
okay. Yeah. He was on a show
called Eureka. He got like a really good, like, late in life or late in his career, whatever you want to call it. Like, role. That role is really good. He's the one good of the wife. Most important parts.
Yeah. But I feel like he was a guy that he popped up in so many movies like this in the 90s. A lot of like courtroom thrillers and things like that. The Astronaut's Wife, App Pupil. Speed 2. He's in Speed 2. I don't remember him in Speed 2.
I don't remember him. That's funny.
He's in The Pest. Good for him. Oh, yeah. He was in John Sayles movies. That's kind of how he got, I think, started in a way. He was in The Brother from Another Planet, I think, was like his big breakout part.
And I mean, here, it's like, it's not like he has much to do, but he actually is like a presence. Like when he makes that joke about how like he has to see his clients like three times before he commits them, he gives a real performance, even though you only see him in one setting. And I will say, like, because movies are so not boring, but like formulaic sometimes, like I thought that maybe he would save her, probably just because he was someone in the movie giving a strong performance, but you really just see him get to talk to her, which I do think adds like a layer to the film. Because she gets to be like, he's the best husband ever. I mean, like, yeah, he freaks out sometimes.
He hates when I feed him half an apple. He really does not like it.
He freaks out, but
he might have killed a woman. But
nice guy, good dad.
He was just trying to protect our marriage.
And also, like, I will say, poor their daughter.
When she comes back, like, from college, what happened?
Well, your dad, the whole time you were like, it's just like.
I did think it was fun, though, him being like on the boat when she's trying to drive away. Like when he crawls onto the boat, it's very like Cape Fear. No, it's a good time, man. The last 30 minutes I really had a great time.
It's captivating. Yeah.
Yeah. 47%.
That's crazy. Today, this is an 88%.
Oh, for sure. This is the definition of a movie that would come out today where people would be like, we didn't know how good we had it. This is so refreshing to see like a throwback adult thriller, like done competently with good stars. 47%, 58% audience score. You would think it would have a higher audience score because it did so well at the time.
And I feel like a lot of people our age, like, yeah, remember it fondly.
Gregory Winecoff of the Dallas Observer said, "What lies beneath is my head on the movie theater floor snoozing through this film." Manolo Dargis of LA Weekly said, "At once illogical and insultingly stupid, filled with dead-end twists and the sort of dialogue that makes a mockery of actual adult relations." A.O. Scott of New York Times said, "Glazes over faster than a Krispy Kreme donut, and neither is very flavorful after sitting around for a while." This is a weird review that I needed to know more of, but it was like such an old review that you can't even read it anymore on the website. I was really baffled by this one. Michael Atkinson of the Village Voice said, "Suggests a Clinton at home scenario for 2001, what? Haunted by the ghosts of dalliances past."
What?
Michael Atkinson, I think, was like,
he thought that it's like,
this is Bill and Hillary in retirement.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, look, Bill definitely has some, he's got some bodies in the closet, but if you made it a fucking paranormal erotic thriller about Bill and
Actually,
Hillary Clinton.
That's not a bad idea.
I didn't kill her. Hillary Clinton waking up in a bathtub to Bill Clinton on the phone with her friend, "You got to check on her in the morning. She's doing seances." I'm so horny. And finally, Roger Ebert gave it not a great review. He said, "Lacking a smarter screenplay, it milks the genuine skills of its actors and director for more than it deserves, and then runs off the rails in an ending more laughable than scary." I think the ending is fun. My MVP is Michelle.
Yeah.
Come on. But special shout out to Joe Morton.
And like, listen, you need Harrison here.
You do. Like, you need a star of that caliber to make that work. I'm trying to think who else would have like sold that part at the time. I guess like a Jeff Bridges would have been great too.
Yeah.
You need someone like that.
I was going to say Jeff Daniels.
You need a Jeff or you need Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Final rating?
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's necessarily like a good movie, but I think it's perfectly like fun and nostalgic feeling. It holds a special place in my
heart. I think it's pretty good.
It's solid. It's a solid movie. It's a silly, solid movie that I wish we had more of, you know?
I like it. I don't know. I think that like what it does well, it does really well. And what it doesn't do well, it's like funny at. Like, I'm like, oh, we are in the seance era of this movie.
We need more movies where drunk white women do seances with their friends because they suspect their husband might have killed somebody. I don't know.
I like it.
I think
And I do like that it changes from being like a Rear Window thing to something else, like to Suspicion, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Because
I think that like it's fun enough at doing the Rear Window thing that you're like kind of having fun, and then you're like, oh.
I'm all in for also a paranormal erotic thriller. I think that's a fun idea.
You have no idea how it feels not to be trusted.
You've got to trust me too, Chloe.
How can you trust someone who thinks you're crazy?
All that education, but you can't remember an umbrella.
This is the girl.
It's impossible. She died 4 years ago.
That girl came to me, and she has a very specific agenda.
Miranda, what's that?
Something is really happening to me.
Look, I'm sad. You're upset.
I'm here to help you, but you have to trust me.
You can't trust somebody when they think you're crazy.
Are you scared? You should be.
I always thought growing up that they just called it Gothica because it sounded cool.
Me too. And then I looked it up after watching this. Yeah.
Gothica, for those who don't know, is a situation in which someone sees or feels things that no one else does, and those who don't think, who can, are crazy when they're not. Perfect gaslighting syndrome. Gothica, like we said, yeah, it's a dark castle joint. It came out in 2003. This is Halle Berry coming off of her first Oscar win.
Is it the first movie after?
No. So her first movie after is Die Another Day, where she's a Bond girl for the final Pierce Brosnan Bond movie. A good one. She is in X2, which is her only real success after her Oscar win.
X-Men 2.
And then the same year she does Gothica. And after that she does Catwoman, which really just sinks her, I think. She does an erotic thriller with Bruce Willis called Perfect Stranger that nobody saw.
I do not remember that.
And then I think she tried to kind of do a light revamp by doing some more Oscar bait stuff with Things We Lost in the Fire with Benicio del Toro.
Oh, I never saw that.
Not very good. Suzanne Bier's like American debut. Benicio's great in it. She's good in it. It's just kind of sappy Oscar bait. But yeah, this is a Dark Castle joint that got like a director upgrade in a lot of ways, even though I think William Malone was in the pocket of those movies. But Mateo Kasovitz, the director of La Haine.
And the fuckboy He's a love interest in Amelie.
He's the love interest
in Amelie. I think a lot of people, yeah.
You either know him as a love interest in Amelie, yeah, or as the director of La Haine, or both. This man is French royalty. And this was his American debut. He did a movie called The Crimson Rivers right in between with Jean Reno and Vincent Cassel. I've never seen, but I very much remember seeing at the video store all the time. But yeah, Holly, this is a Halle Berry schlocky B movie in a way. But I don't remember how it was kind of treated at the time. I think people just hated it. It did well though.
I do remember people just being like, what a stupid movie.
For sure. No, I remember people saying it was dumb.
And where's Penelope at in her career? Because I will say, out of everybody, I was like, she's not in this enough.
She's going for it, though.
She's basically like the Brittany Murphy in The Girl in the Replica.
I know. Like, I literally really have a note. Why is Penelope Cruz playing this Brittany Murphy part?
Yeah, here's
which,
what
listen,
it is.
I'm like, in for.
And I have a note.
But,
it's like the length of bangs. Like, I have bangs that the audience can't see. But from like normal, like sane to insane, it's like just like a half inch.
She's not quite turf bang. It's mentally ill bangs, for sure.
Yeah, it's Girl Interrupted bangs.
They're sideways, yeah. She cut them herself, for sure.
And she's very good at being like, she has that beautiful speaking voice, but she can make it spooky really easily. Like, she's really good at all of her scenes.
She kind
of
had like an Ana de Armas blonde moment where she's like, Daddy is fucking me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like spooky and
yeah. So Penelope Cruz at this point is, she's kind of become a bigger American star, or she's like becoming a big American star. She's probably like early Ana de Armas stages at this point. She does a movie called Woman on Top. She does All the Pretty Horses. She does Blow and Vanilla Sky and Captain Corelli's Mandolin, which I know was like a big bomb all in the same year. She wasn't like working a ton, I feel like, on good stuff in the 2000s because she does Gothica and then she does some smaller projects. She does the movie Sahara, which is like a kind of
with Matthew
McConaughey and Steve Zahn. And then she does Volvere and gets her Oscar nomination.
Right.
And then
so that kind of jumps her up to like a prestigious. Yeah. Okay. Which she deserves. Like, she's fucking great. Like, I think Penelope Cruz is just one of our.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. You think that her American movies are better than they are. But when you look at some of the movies she's done, you're like, oh, her American movies haven't always been great. But she's always usually pretty solid.
She's always pretty solid. She's great in Vicky Cristina. She's obviously pretty good in Vanilla Sky. It's just she's up against, there's a lot of great performances.
She's up against the cum queen, Cameron. Yeah, this is Halle Berry plays a psychiatrist named Miranda Gray. She works at a very sleek mental institution.
Yeah, it's like the Equinox.
It is the Equinox for sure. Of
insane asylums.
Yes. All the doctors are hot. The patients are hotter. They don't know how to cut their hair, but underneath all that, ooh, they're going to get a real glow up when they get out of here. She plays Miranda Gray. She works at this institution. Her husband runs, basically, is like the head of the institution.
Yeah, and because like that scene where they introduce him is very weird because they start having like a professional conversation and then it kind of seems like he's inappropriately hitting on her, and then you're like, oh, they're married. And it's
I think it's also because it's Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah No, you're like,
listen, what? Not to say that like
this is not what I expected.
You didn't expect Halle to be paired with Charles S. Dutton at this point in her career. She had not. This is Charles S. Dutton. Maybe like today they would unfairly pair her. Maybe even then, I don't know.
No, I feel like now we're going through like Yas Queen, Girl Boss era. So we would pair her with like Halle, with like Harry Styles to be like, ooh, see, you know.
Yeah, Charles S. Dutton is Big Daddy husband, and he really just gets like that one scene. Oh, and then also her peer, played by Robert Downey Jr., his first
pre-Zodiac.
Yeah, this is right after all the arrests. He's sober. He's newly sober. This is his first studio movie. Nobody would hire him. He got hired for this movie because I think he was friends with Joel Silver, who produced it. Joel Silver said, I will hire you for this movie, but I'm withholding 40% of your salary until after production is finished. So he kind of like held him hostage and was like, you have to finish this movie or you won't really get paid.
And he met his wife on this movie.
He did. He met Susan Downey, who was Joel Silver's assistant.
All works out.
Yeah, sober but uninsurable. So Joel Silver and Mel Gibson, two bad boys of Hollywood, are responsible for giving a bad boy turn good his comeback. Apparently, because Mel Gibson did a movie around this time called The Singing Detective that he directed, I think.
Oh.
And he agreed to pay the full insurance policy on Robert Downey Jr. So he really helped bring him back. He's solid. Downey's always solid. Downey's always solid or great. This is like a prime example of just, again, having two very good actors play underwritten roles, essentially. I think also the moment that Downey comes on screen, you think that he's going to be the villain. I think that's just kind of like the vibe he gives off is like, because you can't tell, like, did they have were they having an affair?
Yeah, because he's kind of flirting with her.
Right, which is also kind of how Downey is, though. He's naturally just kind of a flirtatious.
He's a naggy flirt.
Yeah, he's fun here. Yeah, this is before Zodiac. And Guide to Recognizing Your Saints, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, all his kind of like big comeback movies before he gets permanently.
Iron Man.
He's permanently Tony Stark. Yeah. He's an Oppenheimer this year. He's doing stuff.
He's doing things.
He's just so effortlessly good. Something especially when you rewatch Zodiac every time, you're like, oh, this guy just
had to be him.
God, reading about his everything he was going through before this, and he was in a bad spot. But yeah, this movie is basically Miranda Gray, Halle Berry. She's driving home in the rain. She sees a very pale white woman on a bridge.
Yeah.
And swerves, gets in an accident, goes over to see if this woman is okay, and suddenly they are both on fire.
Yeah. I just want to take a note here that the kind of doctor that Halle Berry is like a psychiatrist. And when she sees this woman in the middle of the road that could be injured, she yells at her, I'm a doctor, I can help. But I'm like, well, well, can you in a situation?
What can you
and
do?
Then they, yeah, and then they both burst into flames.
That, they both burst into flames, which is crazy. And then it gets into the plot, which is, I think, a really great elevator pitch, which is, what if like a really renowned psychiatrist woke up in the mental institution that she works at and she's a patient instead of the doc? Great
Would
little
she,
setup.
They wouldn't transfer her to somewhere else, because so she wakes up in her own mental facility. And then at some point, I think at this point, you're kind of curious to like, oh, was she never a doctor here? And then you realize that, like, no, that part of the movie is still real, and that she has killed her husband.
Yes. She is being accused of, like, really viciously murdering her husband with an axe, like, chopping him up into pieces. She is in the hospital now. Nobody believes her. Downey is trying to believe her, but doesn't quite think that she's telling the truth. She starts to have conversations with Penelope Cruz, her patient.
Cruz has a great line. She says, you can't trust anybody when they think you're crazy. I also think that, like, Barry's performance, like, does a cool shift in it. Like, I don't want to make everything about race, but I think that, like, the way that she is portrayed afterwards feels, like, unhinged in a way that, like, you would call the cops on a person of color, where you wouldn't call the cops on, like, a white person freaking out, you know?
Yeah.
It's like she's, like, suddenly not worth anyone's attention. Like, no one wants to pay attention to her anymore. No one wants to believe what she's saying anymore.
This movie is written by a man named Sebastian Gutierrez, who would later go on to give us Snakes on a Plane, which is a big indication of some of the dialogue in this movie, which is not always great. Feels like maybe there was like some last minute revisions or something going on. I couldn't really find out too much information about it. Didn't seem like it was like a troubled production by any means, but it kind of has the vibe of one that was.
There's like some confusing.
Yeah. I'm also wondering if it's like it's a first time. It's Mateo Kasovitz's like English first, language
debut.
Yeah,
that's what I think it is.
Maybe there's like some translation issues happening here, but he is thankfully aided by Matthew Libatique as the DP, who's like Aronofsky's DP. He recently did Don't Worry Darling and was the MVP of that movie. It's just funny, like, you watch these movies and the whole time, like, watching this, I was like, this is so silly, but I was like, man, at least our trash looked good. Mm-hmm. At least it had a fucking look. Like,
that's
also the camera actually moves.
Right.
The camera's actually doing things in the movie, where I was like, wow, you never see a camera move like this in one of these fucking movies anymore. It's just stationary, like, one-offs. Again, I think it's another, like, comforting aesthetic from, like, our childhood of, like, these types of movies where it's, like, yeah, that kind of, like, bluish-grayish, moody tint.
But well, it's really, really, really similar to what lies beneath, in the sense that she is being haunted by the ghost of someone, sorry, spoilers, that her husband killed. Her husband is like,
yo, the reveal is so dark.
I don't want to say that he's like more evil than Harrison Ford, because I guess like,
I think he is.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Oh, no, I think he definitely, no, he's like a serial killer. Harrison Ford got a little too horny and killed his mistress, which, look, not good. This man is a serial killer with his best friend. Two big boys, him and John Carroll Lynch.
And they film it.
Are basically running a snuff film factory at a barn. So basically the top psychiatrist and the top cop in this small town are running a snuff film factory out of a barn. It's so dark. She basically gets taken to their like other little cottage barn house that they go to, that they live in. And
they both get taken to their second homes.
Yeah. And she discovers basically underneath in the basement of this place that her husband has been killing, like basically raping and killing women on camera and doing it with his best friend, who's played by John Carroll Lynch as the-
That scene is kind of scary, where Halle Berry is like talking to John Carroll Lynch.
And Lynch is so good. Yeah, he's really good in that scene, because she's basically like profiling who the other killer could be. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, he's like, that sounds about right. And he's like getting really sweaty and like loosening his tie, his clip-on tie.
Yeah.
And then reveals himself to be the other killer, the other bad boy. Yeah, and then it just gets even darker. He's like, yeah, I've been doing this since I was a kid. I love killing women. Basically, he's like, me and your husband, we were like two peas in a pod. We just love to kill women and film it.
Yeah, they would go.
And he's like, but then he met you and everything changed.
Yeah, he's like pissed.
Yeah. But then, you find out that the girl that she's being haunted by is the daughter of another psychiatrist at the place, who is, I believe, the captain of the ship in Titanic.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure that's him. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, Bernard Hill. He is another psychiatrist, and his daughter is this young girl who was killed by...
Yeah,
when you really start to
herself.
Pick apart the story, you're like, this is really dark and upsetting, actually. It's like one of those scripts where you're like, do they realize how really fucked up this is?
Yeah, I think they do, and they're like, it's fun. Okay, also, the subplot is, like, again, like this weird subplot with Penelope Cruz, is that the thing that Halle Berry's character keeps fixating on when it comes to Penelope Cruz's character is that she feels like she's embellishing a rape. And it's like,
oh, right.
That's
right.
A very strange detail where she's like, oh, she's embellishing this rape. And it's like, so it's like the movie acknowledges that her character has been raped, but they just don't think she's raped as much.
You weren't raped enough. Yeah, because she's like talking about getting raped. And then Halle Berry goes by her cell at one point of the night. Penelope Cruz's and sees like basically the tattoo on a white man's chest who is in the cell with her, which is crazy because then it's just like, is this guy like going there every night and raping her and in her cell? And then everyone's getting gaslit.
Everyone's getting gaslit.
They're all getting gaslit. The trajectory of Downey's character is very strange too, because I think he's such a pro that he can make it work, but he seems a little lost as to like, what is my character doing here exactly?
He's like, do I believe her? Do I want to fuck her?
Yeah, because he seems like, I kept thinking, I was like, Downey's going to be revealed to be like in on something. Yeah, he's basically like doesn't believe her and is like, you're crazy and you killed your husband. And then once it's revealed that she like finds her husband's snuff factory or whatever, he's like, she's a hero. It's a very like almost borderline unnecessary character, but
it's kind of fun.
It's fun. It just feels underwritten.
Because I almost think that you need a misdirect character. You're like, yeah.
You do. Yeah, yeah. And it's good casting with Downey. You know what it was? It was the Fugitive sequel, Six Degrees of Separation with Harrison Ford. Remember U.S. Marshals? It was the sequel with Tommy Lee Jones, Wesley Snipes, and Downey.
I don't know it.
It's not very good, but Downey is like, the twist is that Downey, who's like working with Tommy Lee Jones, is actually the real killer and Wesley Snipes is the innocent man. So I don't know. I think that was like one of his last big like studio movies before he went off the rails. I didn't realize they wrote him off Ally McBeal. I always thought that Ally McBeal was post comeback for some reason.
I thought it was too. I thought that's like the thing. Oh, so he's probably teetering and so took Ally McBeal.
But apparently they thought it was weird because like apparently he was responsible for getting the ratings up on the show. Like people started tuning in again because of him.
Oh, really?
And then they wrote him off because he was like such a liability apparently. Hey, he's doing just fine now. He is a very, very rich man. I can't think of many other actors who have been able to come back from something like that and become as successful as this guy.
Yeah.
Look, he seems like a good guy. I've always heard good things about him. Yeah, I miss Downey. I hope he does.
I hope he does something
more good stuff in the
else.
Future.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this, again, like, it's silly and really schlocky and doesn't really make much sense. But like, again, at least it fucking looks good.
It at least looks good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you got good actors. There's a really funny part where they go to like get Halle Berry out of her cell. And one of the like intaker guys is just like, she's a mess.
Yeah. And it's like well.
Also, the shot of Charles S. Dutton when she comes home to him just like, dude, fucking laid out on the couch smoking a cigar. Like, dude, you came home to your husband doing that every night. Like, hey, babe, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, because I mentioned the weird Penelope Cruz backstory, which is, I was like, this is the weirdest, because they mention it like 4 or 5 times.
Yes. And then they both are like free at the end. They're both like just like living their lives apparently very normally. And they both get like amazing like glow ups.
And they like thank each other. Here's like what a dumb idiot I am sometimes. Like, even though I think that like that scene, it could almost be the end of a tampon commercial.
because if a tampon commercial ended with seeing a little boy in the road getting hit by a bus. Oh, my God.
No, I mean, how they were like, thank
no,
you.
I know.
You helped me see. No, you helped me see. Because like my favorite things that I do are like my friendships with like a couple of women. I was like moved. I was like, that is sweet. And she's like, thank you for helping me see. No, you helped me. I don't know whose voice I'm doing.
I don't know whose either. Yeah. Thank you for letting me see that daddy did fuck me. your daddy fucked me. yeah, that would be, I imagine especially Penelope Cruz would be particularly traumatized the rest of her life. That's going to be a hard one to get over. She really got it pretty bad.
Yeah.
Also, I'm confused. What exactly does that last moment mean when she sees the kid get hit by a bus? Does that just mean that she can now see dead people?
Now she's fully Haley Joel Osment. No, no, no.
It was like trying to launch a series of Gothica movies where she's like a medium now.
I kind of wonder. I think it just like becomes the Ghost Whisperer.
Gothica cinematic universe.
No, no, for real. I think that is what they're trying to do, because she's like, I think that's why you need the scene of her and Penelope Cruz being like, thank you. No, no, no. Thank you.
We can solve crimes together now. And then really nothing could have prepared me for that Limp Bizkit needle drop in the credits.
It's insane. I knew
at first, I was like, is that Stained? Because it sounds very like low key for Limp Bizkit, I guess.
That's when I think I started to text you, have you seen Gothica yet? Have you seen Gothica yet?
It's a cover of Behind Blue Eyes by Limp Bizkit.
It just seems like exactly what you need.
It's the song I didn't know I needed to end this movie. Yeah, I literally was like, wait, I know the song. And then I was like, is this Stained? Is this like, what shitty new metal band is this? And I was like, oh my God, it's Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
They're just doing like a very restrained for them cover of Behind Blue Eyes.
Yeah.
God damn. What a time.
John Carroll Lynch was in the fucking Drew Carey show.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that was like one of his early roles.
Just a guy that works, man.
Yeah.
He's just working. Good actor.
Hello, Miranda. Welcome. You're one of us now.
You know I don't belong here, Chloe.
Oh, if you're here, it must mean that you belong. You are not a doctor in here.
And even if you tell the truth,
no one will listen. You know why? Because you're crazy. And the more you try to prove them wrong, the crazier you'll appear.
You are invisible now.
Can you feel it?
This movie has one of our lowest ratings in a long time. 14%. Okay.
Still made it to double digits, but
it's in double digits. 14 was lower than I thought it would be, though.
I thought it'd be like 27. If you were to
45% audience score. The movie did well, though. It made like worldwide, I think, like 150 million.
Who doesn't want to see this?
Who doesn't want to see Allie get gaslit? Like
you know
this?
What we haven't played in a long time?
Hmm.
Could you get fingered to this movie?
Oh. Why not? I think you could get fingered to both these movies.
I think you could totally get fingered to What Lies Beneath and mostly get fingered to
There's a lot of
this,
dead space in the middle of What Lies Beneath where you could get fingered.
You can get fingered. But I do think that like if you were getting fingered and then you saw the dungeon, you'd be like, stop fingering me, please.
Yeah, you dry up pretty quick. Yeah, I don't know. If I was like fingering a girl and I heard Penelope Cruz off camera, like I'm getting raped, I would be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't finger. I fingered a girl in The Devil's Reject, so who the fuck? What can I say? That's probably the craziest movie I've ever fingered somebody in. God, there's got to be another one, though. Hold on.
Did I get fingered to the Savages?
The Oliver Stone movie?
Yeah.
In a movie theater?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, I was going to say, weren't you like 27 when that came out?
Yeah, I meant like at home, but I do think I saw that in a movie theater.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember the last time I like fingered somebody in a movie theater, but
yeah. But I think that these, at least the first one, you can.
That's not true. I fingered someone in Andrea Arnold's Wuthering Heights remake.
Oh, that seems fun.
It was so boring. So boring. Yeah, I the only other movies I can think that I fingered somebody in were Extreme Ops and. I fingered someone after 2 weeks' notice, but not during 2 weeks' notice because it was packed.
As it should be. That movie rules.
This girl wanted me to finger her in Bruce Almighty, but I was I was too nervous because there were so many people around her. I was like, yeah. I can't.
You can't finger right
now. I can't do that right now. Jim's on screen. Yeah, I think you could finger someone in both these movies for sure, though.
Yeah.
More so What Lies Beneath. Gothica, you'd have to be really into the fingering so that you're not aware of what's happening on screen.
Yeah.
You know, or else you might feel a little naughty. Anyway. Okay, 14%. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone called this a stupefyingly stupid thriller. Tight. Manola Dargis said, how anyone in the cast manages to keep a straight face is one of the film's innumerable mysteries. Wesley Morris, the Boston Globe, said, for most of the movie, however, Holly sprints, Holly swims 55 laps, and Holly screams. It's a two-hour fitness video, a portrait of the Oscar winner as personal trainer. I liked the pool scene. I thought that was good.
Me too.
She's swimming so much. But I'll tell you who liked this movie. Ebert gave it 3 stars.
Titties.
I could see hard nips. I'm in. He started his review by saying, the sainted Pauline Kael taught us the movies are so rarely great art that if we cannot appreciate great trash, we might as well stop going. I don't know if she would have defined Gothica as great trash, but in trash, as an art, there is no accounting for taste. And reader, I cherished this movie in all its lurid glory.
Wow. Really liked it.
He was in. Yeah, he said, any criticism of this movie that says it doesn't make sense is missing the point. Any review that faults it for going over the top and deliberate overkill is criticizing its most entertaining quality. Any critic who mocks the line, I'm not deluded, Pete, I'm possessed, should be honest enough to admit that in the moment, he liked it. It takes nerve to make a movie like this in the face of the taste police, but Cassavetes and Barry have the right stuff.
Okay.
Hell yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, bitch. I think Holly's the MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Penelope in the Brittany Murphy role, but I don't think she gets enough screen time for me to quite...
Yeah, she doesn't get enough screen time to...
You know what I mean?
Neither does Lynch. Yeah.
Lynch is great, though. I would say
yeah, it's between Halle Berry. That's what I almost am leaning towards, just because like I think that for being like a horror movie, I think it's... Or like whatever. It's a suspense movie. I feel like that is a scene where you can really feel the suspense, and I think that's largely... his performance.
Yeah, you know what?
You're right. Without it, it wouldn't work. I think it would feel kind of slack. And I think that it's the thing that is kind of keeping the movie billowy. So I'm going to actually say John Carroll Lynch.
Yeah, John Carroll Lynch is just a career MVP for just being like a low-key player and everything. Mm-hmm. Like Zodiac has innumerable MVPs. It would be hard to name just one, but he is hands down in the top five. I'd probably give it to Daddy Ruff, though. I think Ruffalo is the best performance.
I was going to say, I think it might be Ruffalo. But
it's a great Gyllenhaal performance.
I was going to say, but that's the first like glimmer of like the Gyllenhaal I feel like we're going to have today. Also think that... Downey gives a great movie. Yeah, I don't great. Know.
I don't know. Even Anthony Edwards.
Everyone's great. Good in that movie.
It's like a fucking stacked character actor cast.
And I mean,
Elias Koteas. Yeah, you get some really good performances in that movie. But I think Ruffalo has the most layered, kind of subtle, interesting performance.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that.
This is the only time we can award an MVP to Zodiac because we will never be able to talk about it on this podcast because it's a masterpiece.
Too good.
I'll never forget seeing you at that screening of it, and you looked so upset to see me. I think you were with Joe.
I was.
Yeah. I was like, hey, and you were just like, hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Dermot Moroney's in it.
You fuck with my family, you die.
How could I forget Dermot? What do you want? Dude. Time off? A hug?
Yeah.
Love Dermot. Love Dermot. Dermot.
What a career. Like, he's like such a great slow burn career. Yeah, I really.
He's been a silver fox for so long and he's just owned it, man. Final rating? I don't really know what this one is because it's not good.
It's not a train wreck.
It's not boring.
Maybe I would say like future cult classic just because. Has Halle ever made another spooky movie?
I think this is just a nice. Simple. It's a good throwback thriller to put on. It'll remind you of the days of when we got both these movies. It will just remind you of that period when we used to get movies like this all the time and mm-hmm. we took them for granted.
Well, again, the other category that I think is like my cop-out category that I always think is like the time capsule one where it's like, well,
yeah, it's a good time capsule.
It's a time capsule.
It's
yeah.
a movie that you could potentially get fingered to. On the fingering scale, it's high.
Mm-hmm.
Does John Carroll Lynch eat pussy? I bet he does.
Yeah.
I think he does. I bet he keeps his wife happy.
Downey?
I think he does.
Me too.
I think so.
We already did this one. We don't know. We're on the
fence. It's hard to say.
Yeah. James Remar?
Why not?
I think he does. Why not?
Why not? Charles S. Dutton?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't know. No, I mean, I'm sorry. It's not fair. Like the last movie that I watched with him, he's terrifying. He's like a serial rapist.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Look, so it's like, show me another movie or give me a couple weeks. But right now, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I think John Carroll Lynch. Let's see who John Carroll Lynch's wife is. He's been married since 1997. He's eaten that pussy.
Yeah.
He deserves the Richard Jenkins, like, bigger character actor career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, they're both so great, and he just hasn't quite gotten that role that maybe gets him, like, that Oscar nomination or something like that. But you know what? He's also just, like, a guy who's just, you got to have guys like
that. He's always going to be in things.
He's so reliable. Speaking of which, he's in that show, Gaslit. Wow.
Wow.
He's one of the only good performances in Trial of Chicago 7.
Okay.
He has 126 credits. Okay.
He can be a rotten daddy this Father's Day.
Why not?
Why not? I bet he's in a lot of rotten movies.
Probably. He's in that movie Love Happens with Aaron Eckhart and Jennifer Aniston that doesn't exist. You know that's rotten.
Oh.
Oh, he's in Crazy Stupid Love, Shutter Island.
I hate that movie so much.
I know you do. He's in Things We Lost in the Fire with Halle Berry.
Wow.
Wow. Oh my God. Yeah, and you're right. He was on Drew Carey's show, 74 episodes. Is he in drag on that show?
No.
Am I fucking imagining that?
Yeah, you're thinking of the lady.
Okay, maybe I am thinking of something else, but I don't know why in my head he wears drag in something.
Buddy, I don't know.
Wait, hold on. Okay, he does wear drag on Drew Carey.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Anyway, that's right. He's in Face Off, my man.
Oh, yeah.
Most recently,
he was in that Big Sky show that I watched one episode of, and I was like, oh, fuck this.
I think a lot of people probably thought that.
They kill Felipe off in the first episode. It's kind of like a shock kill. Yeah,
he's like the big name. that's it. If you want to watch What Lies Beneath, it's been on HBO Max for a while now. It's there. It's there. It's a nice, comforting watch. Throw it on. You'll feel right at home with it. Gothica, you have to rent if you want to, or torrent, but it's out there. And look, I'm not going to tell you you got to run out and spend money on this movie, but hey, if it's ever on, it's streaming somewhere, give it a shot. Why not?
But like What Lies Beneath, I do think of it as like schlock canon. You should watch it.
Yeah.
And this is fun too. Again, like Michelle Pfeiffer crying in an Adirondack chair about a ghost of this other woman that her husband is killed. It's like the meaning of like white people problems, but like big ones.
Come on. Anyway, those are those movies. Next week, we are going to be switching gears to one movie, one that I think I've been particularly looking forward to talking about and revisiting, which is Angelina Jolie's By the Sea.
Have you seen this?
I have. I'm a fan of By the Sea. Have you seen it?
Oh, I am not a fan of By the Sea, but I actually think that it's weirdly like Labyrinth thing. I wonder if I would like it this time. As someone who like went to go see it in the theater, I was like, what the fuck is fucking happening?
I saw it in a theater and I don't think it's perfect by any means, but there's something about it that kind of stayed with me.
I agree with that. I
kind of
fuck
with it.
So I am actually excited to see it again too.
So yeah, we'll be talking about By the Sea. We will have our bonus episode also coming out soon on Twin Peaks. Fire, walk with me.
Daddy.
Daddy, please walk with me. I mean, look, a blonde Twin Peaks Fire, walk with me double feature would probably work great. They're very similar. Anyway, if you're listening to this, you were listening on Patreon. Thank you, Daddy. A special thank you to our top daddies. No, thank you to our top subscribers who make this possible. Royce Burke, Victoria Kruger, Andrea Ferris, ASR, Ben Beakey, Bork Floyd, Devin Hansen, Jean Yonarel, Britton Chance, Constant Carino, Graham Redman, Jeff Raposh, Neil Fuller, Matthew Hayes, Brittany Barker, Brody Anderson, Eric Hockman, Jade Yankowski, Carrie Owens, Madeline Dugan, Mary Caitlin Kuski, Nick Laskin, and Ryan Oliver. Thank you so much. Tell your friends, the usual.
Tell some rich people too.
Tell some people that are like so rich that they have time to do like seances in their bathrooms.
Yeah.
That's please. The kind of people we want. That's our target audience. Drunk white women doing seances with their friends on a Tuesday night. Please. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man. Yeah.